Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we had a bit of a set-to over Brett Kavanaugh. We also talked about the lack of credibility as far as President Putin is concerned. North Korea also figured in our discussions, as did pumpkin boat races in Germany. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. And as we begin the program, just to advise you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate the five-hour time difference between us and our friends in the UK, where we find Tom Arms in London, England. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you, or actually, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon and evening.
And my first question always is, tell us what the weather's like, because we're going to tell you about our weather here, but what is the weather like there in London?
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful. Temperatures in the low 70s. Sun is shining. It's been a beautiful week. Lovely autumn weather, but it's about to change.
How so?
It's about to start raining for a week, and the temperature is going to be dropping down to the low 60s, upper 50s. And so next week, in fact, starting tomorrow for about next week or 10 days, it's going to be pretty miserable. And that's why I'll be reporting next week, I think.
Okay. And is this typical weather for you there in the UK?
No, we're having a bit of an Indian summer here.
Okay. All right. Well, we're having an interesting time here with our storms. And I'm curious, of course, Hurricane Florence 3 weeks ago. Now, today, as we speak, Hurricane Michael arriving in Florida. Is that getting much coverage there in the European community?
It is, yes. Really? It is getting coverage. I think Florence had received more coverage than Michael. But, you know, Michael, we've heard, has been upgraded to a level 4.
Right.
Which could mean that it's going to be just as disastrous as Florence. Of course, that would be Florida,
right?
Primarily, will take the hit this time, but it's going to be creeping up towards you, isn't it?
It will, and Georgia will be feeling a tremendous amount of the hurricane's force as well. The difference, of course, with Hurricane Michael is that it's a wind storm, whereas with Hurricane Florence, we had wind, but it stuck around for a long period of time, and it dumped a ton of rain, and I mean that figuratively and literally, amounts of rain. As a matter of fact, the rainfall in Florence is only overshadowed by the rainfall in Hurricane Harvey, and not by much, interestingly enough. So we've had our challenges associated with hurricanes. So the coverage is continuing on our weather dilemmas here in the U.S. All right, speaking of weather dilemmas, let's talk about another stormy issue, and of course that being the coverage of the Brett Kavanaugh Senate judiciary hearings, and then, of course, the decision this past weekend selecting him as a justice in the Supreme Court. How much coverage, and what's been the opinion of the European community about that?
A lot of coverage, an awful lot of coverage, especially coverage of what the president has had to say about it by saying that the accusations were a hoax, and also by apologizing to Kavanaugh on behalf of the country and declaring that Kavanaugh has been found innocent of all crimes, which has really bemused the European public, because, of course, right after the testimony of Christine Blasey Ford, he described her as a very credible witness. And now he's saying that she's a hoaxer.
Let's parse that for a moment. I think what the president was saying, and many others said as well, that Dr. Ford's testimony was very compelling. It seemed very sincere. but not necessarily accurate because of a lack of details on her part, particularly, and also the failure on the part of certain friends who didn't corroborate.
I think hoax was the word that was used.
But wait a second. But the word hoax, we feel, was related to other charges, a Swetnick and a third charge associated with the candidate. And I think the president was sort of lumping those experiences in with that term hoax. That's our observation.
Well, he didn't make it clear. At least the European public certainly has not picked that
up.
Okay.
The other aspect,
and the other thing is, you know, I mean, Kavanaugh hasn't been found innocent or guilty of anything.
Well,
he wasn't on trial.
Yes, he was.
He was there for a job interview, and so.
No,
you know, that's another thing that's been picked up by the European press here.
Well,
that's
interesting.
How can you declare someone innocent when he hasn't been charged or put on trial?
Tom, maybe he was there for a job interview at the outset of the Senate Judiciary Committee's meeting, but it then began charges. They were actually levying verbal charges. That is members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's number one. Number two, it was the court of public opinion. And the thing that—
Absolutely.
And the thing that—
I couldn't agree with you, court of public opinion. But the court of public opinion is not the same as the court of law.
But
I suppose the Europeans are being a bit legalistic in this, but I think they expect the President of the United States to be a bit legalistic as well.
Huh.
And because he is the president.
Where was the presumption? But the presumption of, and by the way, speaking to somebody who is an expat, now predominantly of British interest, and that, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, and just to remind folks, he's an American citizen, been living for way too long in the United Kingdom. I say way too long. He's enjoying every bit of it. But the whole issue of presumption of innocence, and that was not apparent in the media. The public opinion, and I would argue even among members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was that not identified in the—
That came over. It was Trump mocking Christine Blasey Ford. The criticism has been leveled now. It's changed from being a criticism of Brett Kavanaugh, which they have a lot to criticize there. They have a lot to say there as well. But it's been the focus of the criticism has shifted from Trump doing things like mocking Christine Blasey Ford, calling her a hoaxer, which they believed that's what he did, and also declaring apologizing on behalf of the British, American people, declaring that he was innocent of all charges when he'd never been charged with anything.
In light of the efforts to actually destroy the man's reputation, which it was done. I mean, there was destruction of his reputation, and I would also argue targeting his family. I for one see the president's apology being appropriate because I'd also argue apology.
In turn, he has destroyed the reputation of Christine Blasey Ford, who now has had to move home, has suffered death threats, and she had nothing to gain. Nothing to gain by coming forward. Brett Kavanaugh had something to gain.
A seat
on the Supreme Court.
Well,
she had absolutely nothing whatsoever to gain.
She's a celebrity. She is a celebrity now, and she will gain a great deal. And as far as the
disagree.
No, she is. And as far as the death threats are concerned, same for Brett Kavanaugh. Let's chat for just a quick moment, because we got to go to a break, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Eliminating the individuals of this discussion, let's look at the process very quickly. What does the European community say of the process that took place over the past 4 weeks?
Well, it's completely different. We discussed this last week.
Yeah,
it's completely different things are done here in Europe.
Granted, it's different. It's different. My question is, judgment call. Do they think that those folks who are responsible, and particularly the Senate Judiciary Committee, the committee itself, do they feel that that organization acted appropriately? Is that something?
I think they feel that the committee reflected the divisions within American society at the moment. I don't think the committee came out of it with a great deal of respect for their deliberations.
No.
and, you know, and the way they conducted everything. And by that, I don't mean just the Democrats or just the Republicans, but the committee as a whole.
Okay, no, I agree with you.
That they came over as a lot of old fools, to be quite honest.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, and he's talking about the Senate Judiciary Committee, mind you, and I would argue even the entire Senate. Stay with us. We've got more to come here in just a moment on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, some 5 hours in advance of us. So this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, talking about other events in the U.S., and we've got to talk about, and this is a topic I think is generating probably some conversation in the European community as well, the announcement yesterday by former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, and of course, Ambassador to the UN, her announcement that she is resigning and stepping down in 6 months. How has that been received in the European community, and what does the European community and the world, if you will, I'd be interested in your observations, what do they feel about Ambassador Haley's actions and her demeanor in the UN?
They actually think she did a pretty good job, that she acted as a bit of a break on the president and his more difficult policies. She was outspoken. She was firm. When she was called upon to do so, she did a very good job of putting the American case. But at the same time, behind the scenes, all the reports coming from diplomats and other people are that she was a voice of reasonableness and practicalness within the Trump administration and will be missed.
Wow. You know, there have been so many criticisms on your part, but also I would argue on the European community's part about the appointments the president has made. And so it's actually very intriguing and somewhat surprising to hear a compliment on President Trump's appointments. So, and we still call her Governor Haley.
Well, you know, 1 out of 100 is not too bad.
Oh, 1 out of 100. Oh, we've got multiples, I would argue. But let's, the other aspect.
All right, I'll go to 2.
All right, let's, I've got to touch on this. Ambassador Haley's criticisms of events happening in the world, particularly in Iraq, Iran, the World Climate Commission. Is there a sense that the tone will change once she leaves and there's a replacement? What's the feeling?
I think the sense is that tone will become even more hard line. Depends on who he finds to replace.
Do they have
Nikki Haley? I mean, Nikki Haley, I think, had a strong enough political base that she could, when it was necessary, independently express herself, either within the administration circles or on the floor of the UN. Now, if someone is chosen who doesn't have that political base, who's totally dependent upon the president for their support, then they're just going to be a mouthpiece.
Is there going to be a great deal of interest on the potential candidates? And have members of the European community begun to speculate on who might be that candidate?
Oh, Ivanka. Yeah.
Oh, no,
you know,
she...
everyone's talking about the possibility of Ivanka.
You are aware she has responded to that initial proposal.
No, I wasn't aware. She said no.
She said absolutely no way. She said she was confident he would find someone, and it would most definitely not be her. So you can share this with the European community that you have it on not only a good source, but an absolute guaranteed source. She has herself removed her name even from consideration. So that name is still being bandied about there in the European community. I find that interesting.
Well, no, it wasn't as of this morning, but obviously it's been overtaken by events, which I try and look at the latest wire stories before I go on air, but I do miss some. It's a pity. I think she might have done a good job. She's
You can't.
She had a very successful trip to India. She has been known to be a very good behind the scenes worker. Mm-hmm. I think she could have been good.
It will be interesting to see how this pans out. And of course, the European community has a high regard for the UN position. Am I correct on that?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, associated with the UN, and we've got several items. I'm trying to put them all together, but let's talk here for a moment related to another world leader since we have talked about President Trump. Let's talk about Vladimir Putin. You note here that his credibility is, in your terms, his credibility is down the toilet. Why so?
It is. It has to do with this Novichok poisoning in Salisbury. They have now positively identified the two GRU agents.
And GRU,
were responsible for the Novichok.
Okay, now you listen to that. Let me interrupt.
GRU was thrown out of the Netherlands for trying to hack into the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons. They've also been identified as trying to hack into the World Doping Agency because, you know, Russia gets in a lot of trouble for providing medical support for their athletes. Mm-hmm. And all these people have been photographed. They've been positively identified at a time when Putin is saying, no, it's okay. Not me.
All right.
It's not Russia. Nothing to do with us. And not only that, but he tells his foreign minister to do the same. He tells the people working for Russia today and all the newspapers to mock the British and the Dutch about any claims that the Russians are doing anything like this. And now it's been proven more or less beyond a doubt. And so he's called in. There's a report in the Evening Standard quoting Russian intelligence sources saying he called in the head of the GRU to say, you moron, you let yourself be caught. And
Tom,
I've been caught in a lie.
Let's talk here for a moment. You're using terms that I want to just clarify for the audience. I apologize. I've been trying to interrupt you on this one. GRU, exactly who is that for the audience?
That is Russia's Foreign Military Intelligence Organization.
Okay.
It's basically taken over from the KGB as the main arm of the Kremlin overseas.
All right. And the other one, you keep using the word Novichok so that folks will understand what Novichok is.
Novichok is a chemical weapon which was used by two GRU agents in Salisbury, England, to try and assassinate a former Soviet spy or a former Russian spy.
Mm-hmm.
They failed. They nearly killed him. They nearly killed him and his daughter. But they did end up killing a British woman and by mistake and making seriously ill a British man.
All right. Now, back to the issue of Vladimir Putin's his credibility. What impact does this have on his ability to communicate with, and he's still, of course, Russia is working diligently with Germany, and of course, there's the effort and concerns associated with the military inclinations of the Russian government, particularly in areas like Latvia, and I would argue even...
People won't believe him.
Okay.
That's what it comes down to. You know, how can... You know, he has mocked people about their stand on the Novichok poisoning and everything else. This has become one of those touchstones where he said, don't be ridiculous. And so it's been proven that he lied about it.
Well,
these GRU agents that went to Salisbury, England, had actually met with Putin and both of them have been highly decorated by him personally.
Mm.
And he denied anything about them. He put them on television, and he made them say that they were a gay couple on their way to Salisbury, England, to look at the cathedral there.
All right. So his fingerprints are all over it. All right, we'll take a break on that. We're coming back.
It makes him look stupid.
We're coming back in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The argy-bargy over North Korea is part of a much bigger geopolitical battle. That is not to say that the denuclearization of an authoritarian and unstable rogue state such as North Korea is unimportant. It is vitally so. But the prize at stake is much bigger. Control of the Pacific East Rim. And what a prize it is. Excluding contender China, the combined GDP of the region is $12.9 trillion and growing fast. The size of the market is 1 billion consumers. For centuries, the Pacific Rim was a Chinese lake and a primary source of wealth for the Middle Kingdom. Then, at the end of the 15th century, Europe simultaneously discovered America and the sea routes to Asia. The power axis shifted to the other end of the Eurasian landmass. By the start of the 20th century, China had slipped from producing an estimated 30% of the world's wealth to a mere 9% in 1913. After World War I, an exhausted Europe faltered, and a rising Japan and America competed to fill the vacuum. The Second World War and two atomic bombs settled that row. Since 1945, the U.S. has been the undisputed political, economic, and military master of both sides of the Pacific. There was a blip called the Vietnam War, but the United States' solid links elsewhere in the region remained intact, and the U.S. and Vietnam now enjoy good relations. America's annual trade with the Eastern Rim is worth nearly $900 billion a year. America's next biggest trading partner is the EU, at $720 billion a year. In military terms, America's position is protected by its Pacific fleet with 200 ships, 2,000 aircraft, and 250,000 naval and marine personnel. On the ground, it has 39,000 soldiers in Japan and 23,500 in South Korea. Then there's the nuclear umbrella with 1,800 deployed warheads. The Chinese are catching up fast on all fronts. But just how fast and how successful they are depends on their economic success. They need cash to compete, which is why they're starting to worry about Donald Trump's tariffs and the resultant trade war. The Trump administration likes to paint its imposition of tariffs as protecting American industry from unfair Chinese trading practices. The reality is that a much more fundamental geopolitical view of the world lies at the root of the Trump tariffs. It is that the real estate tycoon turned president believes in a winner-takes-all, zero-sum competition rather than win-win cooperation. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Beijing this past week to try and persuade the Chinese to push the North Koreans faster and further down the denuclearization road. He was snubbed. Pompeo was denied the normal audience with President Xi Jinping, and Foreign Minister Wang Yi largely ignored the North Korean issue to launch a barrage of complaints against American tariffs. The message was clear. Chinese cooperation on North Korea is tied to tariffs. North Korea's Kim Jong-un is dragging his denuclearization feet. He wants U.S. sanctions lifted before he trashes his bombs. The Trump administration refuses to lift sanctions until the missiles are gone. The Chinese main aim is the withdrawal of American forces from the Korean Peninsula, as this would be a key component in reestablishing Chinese hegemony in Asia, along with control of the strategic South and East China Seas and the absorption of Taiwan. The Chinese take the long view, both back into history and forward into the future. They have long memories to match an ancient civilization, and that historical perspective tells them that patience, planning, hard work, and the natural advantage of geography will restore them to their preeminent position in the region. Many diplomats believe that eventual Chinese success is an historic inevitability and that there is little alternative than learning to work with Beijing. Trump disagrees.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. He's some 5 hours ahead of us, so it's almost going on towards midnight where he is resting peacefully in London, England, where he lives. Tom, let's look at other items here very quickly. I mentioned Latvia a few moments ago. Pro-Russian party wins an election in Latvia, and of course there's some concerns about the, if you will, the encroachment of Russia into areas of the Balkans and the surrounding areas that are bumping up against Eastern Europe. So Poland and Germany, what's the concern there?
Well, we're not talking. Latvia, of course, is in the Baltic. It's a Baltic state.
Not the Balkans, but the Baltic states. Yes.
Just to clarify that, they're concerned about the Balkans too. But you know, this is a Baltic state. There are three main Baltic states: Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Now, these three countries were part of the Russian Empire from the 18th century right up to the end of World War One. And then after World War II, they had a brief period of independence. After World War II, they became part of the Soviet Union. Now, because of that, Russians moved in to Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia in big numbers. Mm-hmm. And they were given the key positions in government and business and everything else. And in the case of Latvia, there are about a third of the population is Russian-speaking.
Hmm.
Now, after Latvia became independent in 1991, it's the Latvians who took over the big positions, and there was a lot of prejudice against Russians. And so they formed their own party called the Harmony Party, and they've managed to get, I think it's 25% of the latest poll, which makes them the largest party, not the one, not a majority, but it makes them the largest party in the Latvian parliament. And it's going to be very difficult for anyone to form a government without them.
Mm-hmm. So is there concern that this has some sort of a disruptive influence on European community?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they are pro-Russian. And all the other Latvian and Lithuanian, Estonian, all the Baltic states have joined the EU. They've joined NATO as protection against Russia, who they see as their biggest threat.
Mm-hmm.
So, every day they talk about the threat from Russia. Now, the Harmony Party, I should make clear, has said they don't want to withdraw from the EU and NATO, but they do want to have good relations with Russia at the same time.
Okay.
I think there's a bit of a conflict. I don't see how you can have good relations with both.
All right.
The Russians are always trying to undermine both NATO and the EU because neither one of those organizations is in the interest of Russia.
Right. And of course, we were just chatting a moment ago about the influence of Vladimir Putin, too, and how his current PR is suffering badly. Let's move on to another item. Since you brought up the European Union, that brings up the topic of Brexit. Several items here. One, I did note earlier in the week, actually, I guess it was last week, that the EU is seriously considering some sort of a compromise with Theresa May. And I'm wondering, what is the future of Brexit? And might that compromise be happening sooner than we anticipated?
They're saying that they're 90% of the way to a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, they could still stumble on that final 10%. The way most diplomatic negotiations work is they save the final 5 or 10% as the most difficult issues.
Right.
In the hopes that the goodwill that's created by sorting out the easier to solve 90% will carry on to solve the 5 to 10%, which is more difficult to sort out. The problem is, if you reach a compromise with the EU, it still has to get past the British Parliament.
And
at the moment, the figures simply don't stack up. We don't know yet what the details are going to be of any agreement, but basically the Brexiteers, the hardline Brexiteers and the Conservative Party are saying that they will not support anything short of a no deal. And of course, the Remainers are saying they will not support anything short of EU membership. And what it's beginning to look like is that the deal will basically commit the UK to following EU rules and regulations and having access to a large part of the European market, but it will have no say in what those rules and regulations are.
What impact is this having on the European community, the economy? I'm sorry, European economy and the British economy. What impact is this having on the European economy?
Well, the pound continues to slide down.
Okay.
House prices are starting to drop after years of going up.
Mm-hmm.
Various companies are announcing that they're going to move their offices to Paris or Dublin or Frankfurt.
Okay.
But and And so, that is starting to have an impact.
No,
it's not having as big an impact as a lot of people said it would, but we're still, we haven't gotten to the cliff's edge, so to speak.
All right.
In the case of Europe, it's difficult to say how it's impacting on them. It's at the moment trade and everything else is continuing as usual. It's helping places like Paris and Dublin and Frankfurt, especially in the financial sector, because people are moving their corporate offices to those cities.
Locations. All right. I want to move on because we just touched on the issue of Parliament. We've got several other items we've got to discuss here before the next break. Parliament, I read with interest. The folks that are cleaning Parliament are a little upset because they're finding residue. We'll just use that term of partying in Parliament. What's going on?
They're finding vomit and condoms. Vomit, I think.
Yes, correct.
You can edit that out later.
I think it's, I'm just. What's going on?
You just wanted me to say it.
Yeah. Well, what's going on?
What's always gone on?
Too much party. Okay. I'm just.
You just find it. In the British Parliament, you find it everywhere where the men and women of power, as Kissinger once said, power is a tremendous aphrodisiac.
Not in Washington, D.C.
And these are people who work very long hours.
Oh.
And they are thrown together for 20 hours a day.
Okay. I'm just curious. No, I find that fascinating. Did it make headline news?
It's no sex please with British. I'm sure you've heard of the play.
Yes.
You know, people are always amazed the British have a sex life.
Oh, right. Well, I'm surprised that this is has it made headline news there in the
not as big as it has in the
U.S.
in the States. I think because the British have this
aura,
this are perceived as being cold and stiff upper lip and everything else.
All right. Let's move on. I just thought, speaking of stiff upper lip, I'm seeing a note here. Works, segues beautifully. Frosty start to U.S.-China talks on North Korean disarmament. How is that being covered there in the European community?
It's being covered, not huge. Basically, it was covered on the foreign pages.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Well,
you had the Mike Pompeo meeting with his Chinese counterpart Wang. Very interesting that he did not meet with Xi Jinping as he normally does, which is a sign of disapproval.
Well, let's
and Wang used the meeting basically to castigate Mike Pompeo for the tariff war, and he tied the tariff war to Chinese support for nuclear disarmament in North Korea.
The topics of President Trump's efforts relative to the economy, but the impact that this is happening on the Chinese economy, and the Chinese have said that they were ready for the fight, but their economy is not doing all that well, whereas the U.S. economy continues to steamroll along.
Well, certainly the American economy is much stronger than the Chinese, and so it can bounce back from these sort of things. What's happening in China is, for one thing, you're absolutely right. The Chinese are beginning to feel the impact of the tariffs, and they've had to adjust their cap on how much the banks can loan out or how much they can hold in reserve.
Right.
In order to accommodate the fact that there's going to be more of a demand for money caused by the tariff war. That's one thing. It's going to put pressure on the Chinese banks, and because it's putting pressure on the Chinese banks, it is putting pressure on the Chinese economy.
NAFTA, the tariff war with China, and of course the impact on Iran and the sanctions on Iran. One has to say, does the European community not at least recognize that President Trump really does know what he's doing when it comes to both international economy and world politic?
No, they think that all this is going to come back and bite him on the backside.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
That's surprising, because they all predicted originally that there was abject failure at the very outset and that would not last long, NAFTA being a good example.
I don't think they predicted abject failure at the outset.
Anyway,
we We're running out of time.
We both disagree on that one. All right, we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment with our guest, Tom Arms, our foreign editor from London, England, Viewpoints Around the World. And again, you're listening to Viewpoints Radio here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. Correct, that's Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I want to run through two items very quickly before we get to your twist of the day. I'm curious about the issue of the Saudi journalist in Turkey.
Ah, yes. Has he been murdered or has he been kidnapped?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know for certain, but certainly something nasty has happened to him because he went into the Saudi embassy in Istanbul and he has not been seen
since.
To come out. And the Turks, in particular President Erdogan, has said he's been murdered.
Wait a second. I find this fascinating that President Erdogan of Turkey is concerned about a journalist in any country, in light of the fact that he's imprisoned.
A lot of people have pointed that out.
Thousands.
His own record. I don't think he's so concerned about a journalist as he is concerned about people being murdered in embassies inside Turkey.
Well,
embassies,
if they're murdered
are not
in,
meant to be if, used for that purpose.
If they're murdered in prisons in Turkey, that's okay, I guess. I mean,
My
goodness. I just find that, well, I will use the word hypocritical. It's irony or ironic
well,
that he's.
I think you have to look at this within the context of Saudi-Turkish relations too.
Okay.
I think that's very important. I don't think enough attention's been given to that. That they have not had good relations for a while. Turkey has good relations with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who has good relations with Iran does not have good relations with the Saudis. Turkey has good relations with Qatar, and anyone who has good relations with Qatar has bad relations with the Saudis. On top of that, Erdogan would like to revive the aspirations and ambitions of the Ottoman Empire, which before World War I, you may know, they actually controlled the holy places of Mecca and Medina.
Right.
And, you know, he would like to, you know, see, not necessarily gain control of them, but he'd like to see Turkey become a major power again within the Islamic world.
So in essence, this is a leverage point for his particular political action.
And on top of that, he's facing a lot of grief at the moment for a lot of things, mainly economic.
Right.
And his own human rights record. And so he has identified a foreign enemy and he's run the flag up the flagpole and said, you know, rally around, lads.
All right. All right. Let's move on to, and I want to just leave this door open for you. Let's talk about the twist of the day, which we always end with. What is our subject today?
It's pumpkin races pumpkin boat races in Germany.
Tell us about this. Pumpkin boat races? Are these pumpkins boats or what?
On a place called Lake Kruhlshofer, which is outside a town called Lomar, about 20 miles east of Cologne. And they hollow out pumpkins and turn them into boats and race them for about 100 feet along the lake. These pumpkins you have to grow yourself, and they have to weigh at least 550 pounds.
Really?
Yes.
Well, they'd have
winners
to be.
Winners get a prize of $230.
Well,
if you've got a big pumpkin in your garden. Actually, it was last weekend, but you know, plan for next year.
It has to be a pretty big pumpkin. I assume the individual.
No, it's huge.
The person has to ride it.
They are huge pumpkins.
And they have to be able to fit inside the pumpkins, right?
They have to sit inside the pumpkin with a paddle, and they paddle 115 feet.
And do you get a prize for being the fastest pumpkin rower or something?
Yeah, they have six different categories, and the prize is a cash prize of $230.
And
I thought this was topical because of Halloween coming up,
right? And by the way, we're gonna have pumpkins for sale in our communities as well. This is,
well, if you have one that's 550 pounds, then
getting a plane ticket for that would be a little pricey. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, look forward to chatting with you next week, absent any major storm. We're hoping that we've had the last, or having the last as we speak.
Fingers crossed.
Definitely. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.